there are voices from the outside. And you know I don't like any voice from the outside. I want Alaskans to be running Alaska.
Congressman Young is pleased with a bill aimed at repealing a BLM rule. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, March 27th. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, business owners in Anchorage are stressed about a steep electric rate increase.
How do you communicate to a customer that this jump in electrical is going to really affect your bottom line, and how do I do that?
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you pick Click Give, you become a partner with a local nonprofit working to protect the things you love about Alaska. Whether it's the arts, our parks, or lending a hand to someone in crisis, with Pick Click Give, it's easy to find a nonprofit that shares your passion or provides programs in your neighborhood. When you apply for your PFD, say yes to sharing just $25 or more of your dividend. If you've already filed, add a donation at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by Pick Click Give.
After discussions with Alaska Governor Bill Walker, Hillcorp has shut down two oil platforms in Cook Inlet in response to an ongoing leak from a gas line. The pipeline carries natural gas from shore to power four oil platforms in Cook Inlet. Two of the platforms had already been shut down. Natural gas will still flow through the line at about half the previous rate until the line can be repaired. The pipeline used to carry oil before it was converted to a fuel line. Hillcorp claims completely shutting down the gas flow could cause water to enter the line, which could lead crude oil to leak into Cook Inlet. Also, both the state and Hillcorp say keeping gas flowing to the platform will ensure essential safety equipment continues running. According to Hillcorp spokeswoman Lori Nelson, shutting the platform down could make it difficult to restart oil production after repairs are made. The platforms produce approximately 1,600 barrels of oil per day combined. Hillcorp first detected the leak in February, but data show the line has been leaking since December, according to the federal agency in charge of the incident. Dangerous ice conditions in Cook Inlet have prevented divers from fixing the line. Hillcorp reports weather forecasts indicate it may be able to start repairs in the next 10 days. Alaska Congressman Don Young was at the White House today for a bill signing. The bill repeals an Obama administration rule known as BLM Planning 2.0. Last year, Interior Secretary Sally Jewell said the rule was intended to give the public a greater voice when the BLM draws up regional management plans. Representative Young says it would have let national environmentalists drown out the input of Alaskans.
They were getting voices, yes, but there were voices from the outside. And you know I don't like any voice from the outside. I want Alaskans to be running Alaska.
Young says he's been to the White House about 20 times before, but this is the first time with President Donald Trump in office. During the brief ceremony, Young stood behind the president's desk and kept his hand on the back of Trump's chair. Young says that's a trick that he's deployed before to show proximity to the executive.
Hand on the chair. I'm supporting the president, and he likes my support.
The repeal of the BLM rule is another step toward shrinking President Obama's environmental legacy. Young co-sponsored the repeal bill. Senator Lisa Murkowski sponsored the Senate version. Electric rates in Anchorage saw a significant jump this month. Municipal Light and Power says it needs to increase electric rates to pay for a new power plant it recently built. But local businesses aren't happy with the sudden increase in electric bills. Some are taking their case to state regulators, while others are trying more creative solutions to cut back on electricity costs. Elizabeth Harbaugh from Alaska's Energy Desk has more.
Can I get 4 chocolate chip cookies?
At Fire Island Bakery near downtown Anchorage, customers probably don't make the connection between utility bills and the price of a chocolate chip cookie. But owner Janice Fleischman says electricity costs are a big factor when she looks at her balance sheets.
A bakery uses an enormous amount of electricity. You know, we run all kinds of ovens and all kinds of equipment, most of which is electrical. You know, we are manufacturing the stuff from scratch every day.
When Fleischman heard about a big electric rate increase that kicked in this spring, she started to worry. Fleischman says for business owners like her, higher electricity bills can lead to tough choices.
How do you communicate to a customer that this jump in electrical is going to really affect your bottom line, and how do I do that? It's a hard time. I don't really want to raise prices on people.
Fleischman isn't alone. This spring, Municipal Light and Power raised electric rates by over 37%, affecting close to 31,000 residents and businesses in the heart of the city. The utility needs to pay off a $300 million power plant that started operating last year. MLNP says the new plant is more reliable and efficient. And by July, that improved efficiency will mean a different line item in customers' electric bills. Fuel cost will go down. In the end, MLNP claims the total customer bill will increase by an average of 19%. But MLNP General Manager Mark Johnston acknowledged it's not surprising many customers weren't sure what happened when they opened their latest electric bill.
I know that it can be extremely confusing because of the timing of the various components of it.
To further complicate things, the state regulator that approves electric rate increases hasn't given MLNP a final thumbs up on the 37% increase. Instead, this February, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska approved what's called an interim and refundable rate increase. That means that over the next year, the commission will hold hearings on MLNP's plan to raise electric rates and won't make a final decision until next March. As an example, Johnston says the state could decide then that MLNP's rate went up by a dollar more than it should have.
If they, March 25th, they send out an order and they say, you know what, you shouldn't have been able to collect the dollar, then for every dollar that we collected, we have to give it back to the customers.
Fire Island Bakery isn't the only business that's unhappy about higher electricity bills. As part of the rate case, the commission will hear from several big electricity buyers. That includes real estate firm JL Properties and the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, which reported to the commission that the new rate will increase its electricity payments by more than $800,000 this year. Anchorage Assemblyman Patrick Flynn, who represents downtown Anchorage, says the situation highlights a larger problem with Alaska's electric utilities. Utilities can build a new power plant and then ask the state to raise rates to pay for it, instead of getting approval to build the power plant in the first place. Then Flynn says there's no easy mechanism to slowly ramp up rates.
It's a source of frustration for me because it creates these rate shocks that were really unnecessary if it had been better planned for.
Finally, Flynn says coordination between all six power companies serving Alaska's Rail Belt, an unusually large number of utilities for a relatively small population, would make the whole system more efficient and lower customer bills. MLNP and two other Anchorage area utilities are moving in that direction, but a final agreement between all six utilities isn't likely to happen soon. As all this plays out, Fire Island's Janice Fleischman isn't waiting for outside forces to help lower her electric bill. Fleischman is planning a new expansion to one of her bakeries and recently decided to add solar panels. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
A Wasilla man and a trooper dog are both dead after a shooting incident on the Parks Highway over the weekend. Alaska State Troopers say they tried to stop a car a little before 3 a.m. Sunday near Wasilla. The driver, later identified as Justin Quincy Smith, sped off until troopers punctured his tires with a spike strip nearly an hour later. Trooper spokeswoman Megan Peters says Smith ran from the car and the troopers sent a dog after him.
The driver ended up turning around and firing off a handgun that actually shot and killed our dog. The troopers then returned fire, and the suspect was injured.
The troopers say Smith died a short time later. Troopers did not immediately release the name of the dog or the names of the troopers involved in the shooting. They are also not discussing many details of the case as the investigation continues. Court records show Smith was out on bail in a February case for felony charges that include assault and failing to stop for police. He also had two active arrest warrants. Peters says it is only the second time that a trooper dog has been shot and killed trying to apprehend a suspect. In September, a man fleeing arrest shot and killed canine Hilo. For the dog's handlers, losing the animals is difficult, Peters says.
First and foremost, the canines are a tool that we use. That being said, it is an animal, and troopers do become attached to their animal. Essentially, it's their partner.
Smith's death marks the second trooper-involved shooting this year. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, commercial air carriers speak out against a proposed fuel tax increase.
We attempted to operate year-round Seattle to Juneau, could not make that financially viable.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, celebrating 40 years of operations in Alaska. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
UPS and Delta Airlines oppose a proposal to triple the state's jet fuel tax. But the Alaska Trucking Association supports a similar increase on fuel for cars and trucks. UPS Representative Jeff Wofford says raising the tax will make Alaska less competitive. He says it could encourage companies to shift to newer jets that can fly directly to Asia.
If higher costs cause carriers to fly elsewhere, this will indirectly lead to either a reduction in revenues or to the remaining carriers having to pay more into the system to account for those who bypass Alaska.
Wofford spoke during a Senate Finance Committee meeting today. Dana DeBell, a lobbyist for Delta, says Alaska is already a difficult business climate for airlines.
Last year, we attempted to operate year-round Seattle to Juneau, and despite putting forth our best effort there, could not make that financially viable.
The estimates show the tax hike would cost airlines $2 per passenger for Seattle to Juneau flights. Alaska currently has the lowest fuel tax for gasoline and diesel for cars and trucks at 8 cents per gallon. Under Senate Bill 25, these fuels would increase to 16 cents in July and 24 cents a year later. Maritime, jet, and aviation fuel taxes are closer to the national average. They would also triple. The bill would designate each type of tax to support maintenance for infrastructure related to each type of transportation. Not all businesses oppose the increase. UPS supports the fuel tax hike for cars and trucks. So does the Alaska Trucking Association. Association Executive Director Aves Thompson says the tax should be part of an overall plan to balance the state's budget.
We believe that action is critical in this legislative session. The Alaska Trucking Association has long supported a highway motor fuel tax increase if the funds could be dedicated to transportation needs.
The Alaska Constitution bars taxes from being dedicated to fund-specific uses, but they can be designated less formally. The Senate Finance Committee is continuing to discuss the bill. The House version of the bill has been referred to the House Finance Committee. The Blood Bank of Alaska says it has been cleared of any alleged wrongdoing and financial impropriety by an audit that wrapped up earlier this month, but a critic disputes that conclusion. The Blood Bank says two auditors from the Food and Drug Administration made an unannounced visit to the facility and spent about a week looking into how the facility handles blood collection, manufacture, and distribution, safety protocols that are essential to public health.
The findings were that there were no findings.
Blood Bank CEO Bob Scanlon says the FDA's audit came to the same conclusion as an internal investigation led by the board of directors last year.
So, I mean, it doesn't get any better than where we are right now as far as the FDA giving us a clean bill of health.
The Blood Bank of Alaska is the largest distributor of blood to hospitals and medical centers across the state. It came under fire last summer when allegations emerged of financial mismanagement, labor violations, and mishandling of the state's blood supply. The organization has vigorously denied those accusations, releasing a detailed internal report disputing the claims. Scanlon says this latest FDA audit clears the Blood Bank of those baseless accusations.
Just because somebody says something, and just because it's printed in the media or placed on the radio, doesn't necessarily make it true. And we are not aware of any specific complaints that have any validity.
But at least one critic of the Blood Bank remains unconvinced. Linda Soriano is a former grant writer for the organization and has worked at other medical facilities in Alaska. Since leaving the organization, she's been vocal in pointing out problems that existed and how they've been handled by management. And Soriano says she hasn't seen any evidence disproving negative claims.
The Blood Bank has never been willing to be forthcoming with information. They have continued to deny, deny, deny. I believe, and it's my understanding from the FDA, that the investigation is not complete.
Soriano says there are parallel issues being confused in the blood bank's latest claim. This month's audit, she says, is a routine inspection that's more focused on technical procedures. She alleges that's distinct from a separate investigation by the FDA into the accusations from last summer.
My experience of annual FDA audits was that they focus entirely on the technical aspects of collecting, processing, and distributing blood products. They don't go into anything financial or organizational. So those are just, that audit is just focused on the very technical aspects of blood collection.
Soriano says she expects the results from a formal FDA investigation into last summer's complaints to be released at some point in the future. Scanlon with the blood bank says that because the recent audit had no negative findings, there is no report available on the scope of what investigators looked into. He says written comments from the FDA will be passed along to the blood bank in the weeks ahead and could possibly be made available to the public. Alaska Public Media has filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the FDA regarding the allegations. The state's first legal marijuana retail store opened in Valdez last fall. But now the future of the store is uncertain and in the hands of voters. KCHU's Tony Gorman has more on ballot Proposition 1 that residents are facing in the upcoming municipal election.
It was only last October when Michael Holcomb made the first purchase at Herbal Outfitters.
I know what you have. This is a water pipe.
6 months later, business has been steady at Alaska's first retail marijuana store.
You can use a glass screen. You're using a copper.
Derek Morris is the general manager of Herbal Outfitters. He says despite some obstacles other retail marijuana stores in the state have faced, he says the store has been able to stay open 7 days a week.
We are currently still servicing all of the local Valdezians in addition to our out-of-town visitors ranging from Copper Center Basin to Glen Allen, all the way up to Anchorage, Fairbanks. We've even had individuals down from Nome.
Now, Herbal Outfitters has another hurdle to jump. This time, it's the voters in Valdez. If the voters say yes to ballot Proposition 1 this spring, the store and other marijuana license holders would have to take their businesses outside the city limits. Carl Hedman is pastor of Valdez Assembly of God Church and lead sponsor of the petition that got Prop 1 on the ballot. In an interview last spring, Hedman said, as a pastor, he has spiritual concerns about the use and sale of marijuana in town, but also said that wasn't the reason why he started the petition.
I believe that any drug use, whether it be Schedule 1 drugs or lower scheduled drugs or even alcohol, have negative impacts on families and individuals.
Hedman also believes that there are other ways to develop the local economy without the promotion of drug use.
I'm all on board for the winter tourism, the WESC, the different events that are come to our city. I support them. The basketball tournaments, we quite often, when the hotels are full, we open up the church for teams that have no other place to stay. So we're here to help people develop economically, but I think there are limits to what we should do in order to promote a strong economy.
Here's what happens if Prop 1 passes. Herbal Outfitters will have 90 days after the vote to shut its doors and close down the business. All marijuana licenses will be banned within the city limits, plus another 10 miles. That means if Herbal Outfitters wants to reopen, it would basically have to set up shop on Thompson Pass. Morris says he and the owners have discussed the scenario, but are more focused on keeping the store in town.
At this time, we can't say if we would move out of town or not, because the finances involved in that are just something that we haven't looked at and actually grasped what the reality would be.
If Prop 1 doesn't pass, Hedman, who is also running for city council on the same ballot, said that he would not contest the issue. The Valdez municipal election is Tuesday, May 2nd. Reporting from Valdez, I'm Tony Gorman.
Alaska reaches a historical milestone this week. On March 30th, 150 years ago, America signed a treaty to purchase Alaska from Russia. Seward's Day commemorates the man who brokered the $7.2 million deal, then Secretary of State William H. Seward. While critics called the deal Seward's folly, The treaty would forever change the history of the region. After the transfer, Sitka, then called New Archangel, was Alaska's capital. The city is commemorating the 150th anniversary with a week of events. There's a youth variety show, a concert of Russian folk music, and an art exhibit at Sitka National Historical Park. Here's Park Ranger Ryan Carpenter.
The idea behind this is to give artists the opportunity to be able to voice their perspectives on the impacts of the Treaty of Cession and the transfer on the Alaska Native people and people in general throughout the state. And so there are paintings, sculptures, some beadwork, some digital art.
Poetry will line Totem Trail, which leads to the battleground where the Kiksati clan clashed with Russian forces. Sitkins regard their history with mixed emotions, and for many, the legacy of the transfer is a painful one. Organizers are calling it a commemoration rather than a celebration, and commemorating with a variety of agencies to capture different perspectives. Pat Alexander is a member of the Alaska Native Sisterhood and also serves on the board of the Sitka History Museum.
For 150 years, we have read the history of the transfer of Alaska from a non-Native point of view, and this will be an opportunity for people to hear that story from a different perspective.
This week is just the beginning for Sitka. The city is preparing to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the transfer ceremony on October 18th.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
The Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery opened again on Saturday in parts of Hayward Strait and Krestoff Sound. The fleet caught 5,200 tons in just over 3 hours between 12 and 3:20 p.m. That brings the cumulative harvest for the season to just over 13,000 tons. While the 48 permit holders stood down on Sunday, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game spotted the first significant spawn. Roughly half a mile of active spawn was observed south of Fred's Creek and west of Cresta Point. ADF&G will continue to measure the size of the spawn while Sitka-based processors ready the herring for buyers. Sunday's haul was 995 tons shy of meeting the annual quota. ADF&G says this is too low to allow for another opening. Permit holders were expected to harvest the remaining in controlled fisheries today. The country's best cross-country skiers are racing in Fairbanks this week, including in national championship events. The four races at the Birch Hill Recreation Area are the conclusion of the season-long North American Super Tour Series. More than 140 athletes are signed up, including most of the U.S. ski team. Chief of Competition John Estel says the national team group includes world championship medalist Keegan Randall and Sadie Bjornson of Anchorage, as well as Minnesota's Jesse Diggins of and Catlin Gregg.
This will be far and away the best women's field ever to compete in a cross-country race or maybe any sporting event ever in the history of Fairbanks.
Estel says the field also includes several skiers with Fairbanks roots who have gone on to represent the U.S. internationally. He says recent upgrades to the Birch Hill trail system, coupled with ample snow and expert trail grooming, are making for ideal racing conditions.
My goal whenever we're organizing a big event like this is to make the people who come to the races think this is like the best place in the world to live if you're a cross-country skier.
Estel says all the races are being run on courses that loop through the stadium at Birch Hill, offering nearly continuous spectator viewing. Big mountain skiers and snowboarders from around the world brave deep snow and steep slopes in the Haynes Mountains for the Freeride World Tour. Friday's event took place after a week of waiting for unsafe snow conditions to settle. KHNS's Emily Files watched the competition and has this report.
Hello and welcome to Haines, Alaska, for the fourth event on the 2017 Freeride World Tour. It is aptly named the Dream Stop.
And announcers Ed Lee and Martin Winkler talked through the action on the Freeride website's live stream of the Haines competition. This is the Freeride's third time in the Chilkat Valley. The weather and snow conditions have to be just right. Organizers hoped to kick things off Tuesday, but had to delay.
Yeah, no shortage of snow. That's been the big issue this week, just waiting for the snow to settle.
The competition began around 11 a.m. Friday morning.
Drops in, first rider on the face.
It was 2 hours of incredible runs.
Holy wow. Moly.
Big drop, double 360.
Incredible heartbreaks.
He's riding straight. Oh, no.
I jinxed him.
And one avalanche.
I'm covering some rocks. Whoa. And a slide. But he's handling it like a boss.
He knew exactly where his escape route was.
It was Swedish skier Reina Barkered who triggered a significant avalanche. The tumbling snow was a reminder that unstable conditions put the competition on hold for several days. At a reception in Haines about a week before the competition, Barkered explained what competing here over the last 2 years has taught him.
Yeah, what I learned is that I learned nothing. So I'm going to start from scratch and just try to send it.
What do you mean by that?
No, it's that you never know. Like, it's it depends so much on what these other crazy guys are doing up there. So I'm going to find what I think looks fun and ride it the best I can.
Barkered steered clear of the sliding snow and stayed on his feet, earning a high score. The deep, fresh snow was a double-edged sword. It helped some riders and hurt others. Shannon Yates is an American snowboarder.
We all know what we're waiting for, and it's just this awesome Alaska line. And you just kind of get this level of anticipation waiting for go day. And it's pretty cool.
She was calm and collected, knew what she was doing, just let that surface slide pass.
She aced her run and came in first in the women's snowboard category.
So Shannon Yates stays on her feet.
Alaskan skier Hazel Birnbaum also had a successful run. At the reception the week before, Birnbaum said after multiple competitions in Europe, it was nice to be back in familiar terrain.
On the competition day, it's really anyone's game, and that's the cool thing, is like everyone is really talented. And anyone could win at any point. It just depends on like who's having a good day.
In all but the men's snowboard category, scores are close enough that the Freeride 2017 title is still anyone's game. The athletes who competed in Haines go on to the finals in Verbier, Switzerland, April 1st. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Casey Grove, Zachariah Hughes, and Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Emily Kwong in Sitka, Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Tony Gorman in Valdez, and Emily Files in Haines. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
When you pick Click Give, you become a partner with a local nonprofit working to protect the things you love about Alaska. Whether it's the arts, our parks, or lending a hand to someone in crisis, with Pick Click Give, it's easy to find a nonprofit that shares your passion or provides programs in your neighborhood. When you apply for your PFD, say yes to sharing just $25 or more of your dividend. If you've already filed, add a donation at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by Pick Click Give.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.